Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
It is interesting, isn't it, Alan?
Well, it usually is. Yes, indeed, Lillian. Yes.
When is it not?
No, never. I can't think of a possible time when it would never be interesting.
All right, what have we got today? Fake sunblock.
Well, the theme of the show today, I think, is scandal, really.
Scandal.
I think three scandalous things, I think. Starting off with, as you correctly say, sunblock. And a big shout out to the bastion of New Zealand Consumer Protection, aka Consumer Magazine. And they did a survey of 19 different sunblocks that are available to the general public and basically found that 9 out of those 19 didn't conform to the claims, let's say, on the bottle. Yeah, which is really, really poor for something so very, very important. The problem here seems to be that sunblocks are cosmetics in New Zealand. So they're classed as being cosmetics. They're not classed as being an essential
health and safety.
Yeah. I would have said so. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, it's really, really sad that we just can't go out in the sun now without putting on sunblock. You just can't walk out because you get burnt. If you're like me, you go red in about, 5 minutes. I'm hopeless. But
So I've started trying to bike to uni, and my boyfriend, if he's listening, is going to laugh at me because I say I try. Often I don't. Anyway, the point is now with it being summer, when I'm biking home in the afternoon, I can feel myself getting burnt.
Yes.
And it's not even a long bike ride. It's like 10 minutes max.
Yeah, no, it is really, really sad that it has come to this, but it's an essential thing. It's not a cosmetic. It's an utterly essential chemical, I guess if you want to call it that. And people are hawking it out there and not conforming to the claims that they make on the bottle, and that's really, really poor, and I think people need to pay for that at least. It's appalling.
There's no reason to, there's nothing in place that says you can't just say, oh, it's 50 SPF or something like that.
Well, there are guidelines, certainly.
Okay.
In Australia, they are mandatory. Okay, so everything has to conform to these particular guidelines, basically, which says that they are going to let a certain percentage, whatever, of UVA and UVB light through. And in New Zealand, those are not mandatory because of the fact that they are classed as being cosmetics. And so I hate to say it, but you can really get away with putting out any old crap out there.
Because I saw in this article that one cosmetic company, or I think it was one woman in particular, had said that she'd labelled her sunblock as 20 SPF, mm-hmm. but she never tested it.
Yeah.
She just made it and she said, oh, it's probably 20 SPF.
Yes, yeah. There's a little thing called quality control that all companies who are making anything need to have. And
that just blows my mind.
It really is utterly appalling that people can get away with this. I mean, this is literally a life or death situation, You get melanoma 20 years down the track because you've been, covering yourself in this stuff that supposedly keeps your UV out, and it doesn't. And that's appalling. Where are the consciences of these people that do this?
I don't think capitalism has a conscience.
Ah, well, there we go. Yeah.
Conscious. But Alan, does this mean that people will want to take people to task for this? Are they, if you do get cancer down the track, are you going to go back and say, look, I've used this sunblock. Is it good enough?
Well, I think sort of legally that's precluded in New Zealand, isn't it? That's what ACC is there for, I believe, sort of suing. I don't think we can actually do that. But, just the fact that all of these things, they're meant to be tested on at least 10 volunteers. And 3 of the sunscreens basically hadn't done that, certainly. And, one of them just had tested on one person. And they were claiming SPFs of 15 or so, and they actually, when they tested them, they were about 4 or so. SPF, just so you know, so if you've got an SPF of 2, that means a half of the UV light gets blocked out, the UVB light, okay, which is the really, really dangerous stuff. And if you've got an SPF of 50, then only 1/50th of the light gets through. Okay, so an SPF of 50 means that basically 98% of all of the UVB rays are stopped by the sunblock. Again, assuming that it's particular thickness and that it's put on again regularly and you're not sweating lots.
Yes.
All of that sort
There's
of stuff.
There's certain rules around this that are very, very careful. I'd like to shout out to my days as a beachhead instructor and telling kids that you have to
slip.
3 things now that we're talking about it. You have to check whether it's water resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You have to check the SPF, obviously,
yep.
What the number is,
yep.
And the expiry date. Very important. Yes. That sunblock is not off.
Yeah, yeah.
Smells bad, but don't, also makes you morbid.
My tip is don't leave it in your car over summer because it gets real hot.
Gross.
Because, no, this happened to me. I left a bottle in my car and it must have got real hot. I went out for a surf at Piha and I just came back just absolutely cooked. It was not all good.
So while we're on this point, because obviously sun safety in New Zealand is quite particular, and can we talk a bit about that? Because there's a hole in the ozone layer. Why? That's our fault too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But luckily that's getting smaller because people have had the good sense to ban chlorofluorocarbons, which were these ozone-eating chemicals that were often used in fridges and stuff like that way back in the day. And it was realised that this was causing damage to the upper atmosphere, and the people who actually found this out ended up getting a Nobel Prize in chemistry for that way back in about the 80s, I think, there or thereabouts. So it has been known for a long time.
Right.
And so chemicals like carbon tetrachloride, things like that that were used a lot in the dry cleaning industry, so they have been banned now. And as a result of that, we have seen that the ozone layer, or the hole in the ozone layer, is getting less and less and less year on year on year. So, you know, that's a big success. That's a big success of science.
That is a good point to make. But I would like to say the moral of the story essentially is we messed up, started making a hole in the ozone layer. Now people are capitalizing off that. Essentially,
by making
fake sunscreen.
Yes. Yeah. One bad thing leads to another. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Humans.
Yes.
My quick question is, how does sunburn happen? Because is it damaging the folate stores? Is that what's happening? Because do you not know? That's okay. Well, am I calling you out on air?
Yeah, you possibly might be, but it's basically the molecules in your skin are absorbing ultraviolet light, and ultraviolet light is very, very, very energetic.
Okay, because you said the UVB was the worst.
Yeah. It all goes on the wavelength of the ultraviolet light. So UVA is relatively long wavelength ultraviolet light, and UVB is shorter wavelength, more energetic, therefore more damaging, okay?
Ah, okay.
So it's that the SPF refers to. Yeah. So you've got to stop the UVB. But then apparently the UVA, even though it's not as energetic, it penetrates the skin further.
Mm.
And so that can be the one that starts giving you all of the nasty melanomas and things like that.
Yeah.
So you got to watch out for that, and so therefore you need to look out for broad spectrum. It says it on the bottle. It's got to offer broad spectrum protection. That means that it is stopping UVA and UVB.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to HPV misinformation?
We shall. Okay. So last week saw the awarding of a thing called the Maddox Prize. Now this isn't as famous as the Nobel Prize. But this is awarded basically to sort of, I guess you'd call them public defenders of science, I suppose. So sort of explanation of science in the public interest. And it's named after the ex-editor of Nature, Sir John Maddox, who was a big believer in this sort of stuff. And the award this year has gone to a Japanese doctor by the name of Riko Muranaka. And she has been instrumental in explaining the fact that the HPV vaccine, human papilloma virus vaccination, is actually safe.
Now, this relates to which part of the body?
So, it is basically the sex organ, shall we say, both guys and girls. So, yes, I know.
Is it men as well?
Yeah, it is men as well.
So,
yes, indeed.
When they say you're going for your cervical smear.
Yes, yep. So when you get the vaccination, so guys can be vaccinated as well. And so in New Zealand, the vaccination is free for all kids from 9 to older kids, 26. Yep.
Okay, two things though. So because women have to do this quite regularly.
Yes, indeed.
How do men get their cervical smear?
Vaccinated, basically.
Okay, so they just prevent with the vaccination.
Yes, I believe so.
There's no way
so,
of testing if they. How do they
find
it?
What it also causes is genital warts as well. So they can be given as a sign that you've got the virus, I guess. And so in New Zealand, it's been very, very successful. So the incidence of genital warts has dropped like about 91% or so in over a space of 4 years since they introduced the vaccination. And the vaccination uptake is very, very high. And in Japan, this was also the case. So they introduced this in around about 2010. In Japan, the government was saying that, yes, we'll offer this for free. You can go and get vaccinated against this. And so the uptake rate there was around about 70%. And then Japanese TV and other media outlets started showing these videos of kids with neurological problems and who had trouble walking and are in extreme pain and everything. And this was kids that had been vaccinated with the HPV vaccine.
Ah.
And then this was blamed on the HPV vaccine. Now, so the Japanese government then got their doctors involved and everything, and they came out and said, no, there's nothing wrong with this. But the government actually dropped the recommendation that all kids be
should
vaccinated. And so, the vaccination rate dropped from 70% to 1%.
Whoa.
1%. All as a result of this misinformation. And then there was a Japanese doctor that came along and said he was doing mouse trials and everything, and he showed, so supposedly, that there was a link between mental defects in the mouse and the vaccine. And so this is where Dr. Murinaka came along and said that this is complete rubbish and the HPV virus vaccine is absolutely safe and you should get out there and vaccinate your kids. And she then got sued by this doctor who did the mouse studies and everything, and that's an ongoing thing. And
Whoa. She's
been sort of pilloried and everything. And, you know, she's a very, very brave individual. She's getting out there and saying that, you know, this just isn't true.
First up, who paid for the ads?
I'm not sure they were ads so much. I think they were just sort of on the news.
As far as
I understand, I think so. They were just they're just out there in the
news. I'm amazed because we've talked about this before, Alan. The whole one scientist suing another because they proved them wrong or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that just raises alarm bells for me instantly because if you're that sort of, if you're not confident in your own work, that you have to sort of take a backward stance and
I agree. And the, you know, the scientist that was getting sued, apparently what he did was, he found one mouse that had been adversely affected, and so he sort of put that out as being the news that, you know, there's this definite connection there.
So he did a
there.
Massive study and only one mouse sort of
Well,
his point.
I think the first mouse he found, he sort of, you know, put on the news and everything like that. And he was, I believe, censured by his university for doing that, but he wasn't sort of found guilty of fraud or anything like that. But this is what she is doing. So he sued her. So, you know, it's now got massive publicity. She now, as a result of winning this award, is famous all over the show now. So, you know, it's this can't be anything but good.
We'll come back to that. We have a caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm just ringing about the your thing on the wire now about UV.
Ah, okay.
I don't know whether this is, you know, whether you're able to convey this. I just like to ask a question of the guy, the expert there who's expressing himself on UV and the importance of banning CFCs and all that.
Mm. Alan is listening.
Hi.
Oh, good. Just the one question, you know, just interesting question. Where does UV, where does ozone actually come from? You know, how is it formed in the atmosphere?
good question. That my understanding is it's formed from oxygen and high energy particles from the sun coming in and creating radicals in the upper atmosphere, and that then reacts with oxygen and you end up forming ozone from that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you know that. So the next question is then, do you think that's got anything to do with the fact that there's holes, so-called holes, in the ozone at the poles?
At the poles?
Yeah, you know, like there's a hole over the pole, over both poles, right? There's these ozone holes that they're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's your take on that?
That those holes were formed from the chlorofluorocarbons, so the ozone-depleting chemicals.
So it can't have anything to do with the fact that there's hardly any sunlight at the poles, so there's nothing creating ozone.
My understanding of that is that whatever's in the atmosphere will eventually sort of go right around the world, as it were. But I don't think that's a
caller.
Yeah.
We could talk about this all day, I think, but we have to get through our topics. Thank you for calling in, though.
No worries.
Good
day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, Alan, back to HPV. Sorry, right. I do want to ask though, how can people be absolutely sure about vaccinations?
Okay, so in Japan every year there are about 28,000 women diagnosed with cervical cancer and around about 3,000 of them die. I don't think 3,000 women are dying in Japan of having these vaccinations. I think simple as that.
So it's about testing and...
you know, in order for anything to be injected into you, it has got to undergo such rigorous tests. over many, many, many years, and costing buttloads and buttloads and buttloads of money. And, you know, those are our checks and balances against these things. Now, very occasionally things slip through. And when things do slip through, then the checks and balances get harder. And so eventually we get to a better and better system. So, you know, I'd trust it. So,
should we go on to the final topic?
A very quick one. Yes, Michelle. Yes. Because you've got a lot to get through. So, yeah, this is terrible too. This is scandalous. So in Britain, there is a forensics lab that has been found to not so much make up as results, but to sort of circumvent the quality control process. So this is a forensics lab that does samples for criminal cases. So criminal cases such as sexual offences, drug driving, unexplained deaths, etc., etc. And it's been found that going back to 2013, their results cannot be relied upon because they've found evidence of people there who, as I say, were really sort of circumventing the quality control process. So instead of putting their results through a particular process to make sure that they were kosher, they just sort of fed them through to the courts with no again checks and balances. And as a result of that, around about 10,000 court cases are affected. They reckon that retesting all of these samples is going to take 2 to 3 years.
Holy shit.
They've immediately got rid of 50 cases that were due to go to court. This is utterly, utterly appalling. So two people have been arrested from the company. Not surprising at all. This is terrible.
So it's the process in which they've dealt with.
Yeah. So when you are doing any sort of analysis, you've got to make sure that your results are okay. That essentially that they're reproducible. You know, that if you measure your sample again, you're going to get the same results. And that's what quality control is all about. And in forensics, God, it's really seriously important. You know, it's absolutely vital that you do this. And they weren't doing this. And as a result, the results could have been okay, but we don't know because they haven't gone through these, you know, these necessary checks. And, you know, 10,000 cases, retesting all of the data and everything. Oh, my goodness. And so, you know, what this may do, you know, the samples have been sitting around maybe in some cases since 2013, so they could have degraded. Yeah. So what were once positive samples may now be negative. And
So can we keep an eye on this case, maybe?
Absolutely, we can.
Find out what they have to do.
For sure.
I mean, the troubling thing for me is we've been talking about this a lot recently, and I feel like, I mean, you'd agree in saying that science is the pursuit of fact. I mean, yes. You're trying to find, I mean, that's the whole point.
Or indeed the explanation of fact.
Exactly. But yeah. I feel like a lot of what we talk about and a lot of what, it's honestly terrifying that so many people circumvent this whole factual thing. It doesn't matter. It's all about the clickbait or whatever.
The trouble with science is that it's carried out by humans.
Yeah.
It's the human element in science. It's the wanting to get ahead. It's wanting to get promoted and, you know, make professor and win the Nobel Prize and all of that stuff. So, you know, let's cut a few corners here and there. Let's make money. Let's whatever. And you can't do that because eventually you get found out.
Mm.
But in these days of Trump, being found out seems to not matter.
So the takeaway message here is science is awesome. Humans suck.
Some humans suck.
Some, okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
and also some. Maybe that,
and they ruin it for the rest of us.
Fake news has been around for a long time.
Yes,
actually,
indeed.
Not just right now. Thank you so much, Alan.
Not a problem.
Talk to you next week.
Sure do. See you guys.
That was Dear Science.